Oh, hey there. Welcome to Pop Rocket, our weekly show about the pop culture we all love to love. I'm Guy Branum on assignment in New York City, and we're trying to figure out how to make all of this happen with Skype and a remote Zoom. So it's going to be awkward and difficult, and us talking over each other is not going to be as fun and seamless as it is normally.
But seamless, normally?
We'll get
really?
It done. You guys, in the LA studio, our digital strategist, Winter Mitchell.
Hi, guys.
DJ / professor, Oliver Wang.
Hey, guy.
And the always charming journalist, Margaret Wappler.
Hello.
I got a hello from you and not from Winter. Everything's upside down this week.
It's bizarro Pop Rocket.
On Pop Rocket, we launch each episode with a personal pop culture question suggested by a listener. This week, a listener on IndieWire suggested, what was your first inappropriate movie? Winner, what was your first inappropriate movie?
Oh, gosh. It was a tie between An American Werewolf in London or Poltergeist. And because I was like 3 or 4 years old, and the reason is because I find bathrooms to be my sacred space, and that movie violated both sacred spaces for me as a young child. So it sucked growing up after that, because at least until I was about 11, I kept the bathroom mirror door open and to when I peed.
Your family sounds very lucky with that decision.
It worked out for the better, trust me.
Oliver, what was your first inappropriate movie?
I want to say it was 1980 or 81, and my parents took me to a drive-in screening of The Night the Lights Went Down in Georgia, which I don't even remember what the plot was, but my parents thought because it had Mark Hamill, and because Mark Hamill, of course, was in Star Wars, that somehow this film would be okay for kids. And I think what disabused them of that was both some full frontal nudity as well as shit being said. And they both covered my, either they covered my eyes or ears, and I don't really remember what else happened besides that, except that clearly this was not a, they should have done more research before taking us to go see this film at the drive-in.
Of course, you were probably delighted.
You know what? I don't think it occurred to me that there was anything particularly subversive, but I mean, mostly, I think maybe I was expecting it to be like Star Wars. I'm like, what the hell is this?
Well, imagine how many people showed up thinking the same thing.
Based on the fact that it just had the same actor? Again, I would hope more people did more research.
We were dumber people at that time.
I love that childhood assumption that just because an actor you know from a movie you like is in a movie, that it's going to be a consistent quality of movie. Like, I watched so many bad Kevin Kline movies after A Fish Called Wanda.
Yeah, he led people astray.
I mean, Vince Vaughn, anybody? Let's just be real about that.
Wow.
Okay?
Poor guy.
Margaret, first inappropriate movie.
Well, Poltergeist also scared the hell out of me, and I was convinced I was going to be in a nightgown and somehow fling up against the ceiling because of those spirits.
Or go into the television.
Yes, yes.
You could be taken in.
But I think The Exorcist did me in worse because my brother had a bedroom and he got cable on his TV in the back bedroom, and he was like, Margaret, come watch this movie. And I was about 7, 8 years old, and we started watching it, and then he wouldn't let me out of the bedroom because this was my older brother. This is the way he did. And I spent the whole night just like having nightmares and being totally scared to like close my eyes. It was not good. Sessions of therapy
to
later.
Close your eyes, Margaret?
Yes.
Cruel older siblings are the best antidote to helicopter parenting.
It's true.
Like, however much you try to insulate your child and protect them, like a 4 years older brother, like forcing them to watch scary movies or just hitting them randomly throughout the night, so valuable.
I just want to point out that this conversation highlights how old we all are because none of us said porn. You know, that wasn't the first thing that we turned to because it was just much harder to access.
It was harder to access that.
That's
but
what I'm saying.
I did find my dad's stash.
Right.
Which was...
We all have a dad's stash.
Well, my dad had a stash and he did a terrible job of hiding it. It was like under the staircase.
Not under the mattress?
Not under the mattress. That was the classic. But you know what? I kind of like my mom and dad for that. They're very progressive and they were just like, we're not going to, you know, it's out there. It's just, you know...
Just under the staircase.
Under the staircase.
When I read first inappropriate movie, my mind immediately went to boobs. And when I was in fifth grade, our teacher showed us American Flyers, which is like a heartfelt story about two boys bicycling. And all I was aware of is we watched a movie at school that had boobs in it. And like 10-year-old gay guy was just so offended and disturbed and did not understand why it wasn't a public scandal.
And you got that teacher fired. This is how that story ends.
Did you tell on him? Did you tell on the tell the truth, guy?
Yes, of course I told on the teacher.
You're that one. Ouch. Just alienate yourself further. Why don't you?
Snitches get stitches.
I was the worst. All right. Thanks, IndieWire. If you'd like to suggest a question for next week's show, drop by reddit.com/r/maximumfun. I cannot say backslash. Meanwhile, you can tell us about your own first inappropriate movie experiences over on the Pop Rocket Facebook group. Coming up on this week's Pop Rocket, we are going to talk about how and where we're all discovering new music. But first, what are we all about this week? Margaret Wappler, what are you all about?
Well, I rewatched Grey Gardens, which I don't know if you've seen it recently, but I was inspired to watch it again because Albert Maysles died this week. So I went back to the 1975 classic, and it is just as comedic and at once horrifying as it ever was. And what struck me about it, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it's basically two women, a mother and a daughter, who they were society women, Jackie Onassis.
Like second cousin, right?
No, on the Jackie, Big Edie was the aunt to Jackie.
Okay.
So they definitely had connections, and Jackie actually rescued them at one point and paid for their very dirty house to be cleaned out because they were about to be kicked out of East Hampton. So they were really living this life of decrepitude, but at the same time, somehow weirdly charming as they perform and dance for the camera. And I was just very struck by how much more the movie seems compassionate now, like in a time where we see reality TV use some of the same strategies of capturing people at their worst, but really feeling much more exploitative. So
there's also a little bit of beauty in watching them.
Mm-hmm.
Just interact with each other in their own little isolated, you know, quote unquote island.
Yeah, they're just in their own rotting kingdom.
Their own rotting kingdom. It's like a video game. I like it.
I would like to note that when Margaret was saying, I don't know if you guys have watched it, she gestured to Oliver and Winter. And it, of course, never crossed her mind that I hadn't watched it. And she was, of course, correct.
No, you're a gay man. You have to see it by law.
It's the law. And I, after Maisel's died, I watched the revolutionary costume scene. And then I watched the song from the musical about it. And I was just, there's something so wonderful about, you know, when we think about cultures producing like new innovative culture, marginalized cultures creating new innovative culture out of marginalization, that moment of her with nothing, living in squalor, creating, like, feeling the need to have a kid, wanting to have something that makes her feel sophisticated, is just so beautiful. And I understand so well why that is a moment that just means something to gay guys.
You have to watch it because, and then you have to watch the Drew Barrymore and Jessica Lange.
I haven't seen the movie. Is it actually any good?
It's so good. Oh. It's so good because it's the other side of what you saw. So you get the backstory, then you get the actual being approached to do it, and then you see how they get into this destitute situation, and then you see. Just off camera what they were like together. And it's really beautiful, actually. She did an amazing job, Drew Barrymore and Jessica Lange.
The TV movie is really good, but I love the musical so much because it does sort of put together the heart and the soul of what makes that documentary amazing.
Best episode of Hoarders ever.
Yeah, it really is.
Most beautiful.
It is the most beautiful. Most glamorous.
Oliver, what are you all about this week?
I'm about the institutional response to the racist chant video that went viral over the weekend by members of the University of Oklahoma's Sigma Alpha Epsilon fraternity. So for those who are unfamiliar, there was some party bus that members of the fraternity were on, and there was a racist chant which involved both racist language and a lynching allusion. So it was really a twofer. And I think if I have the timeline right, it went viral on Saturday night.
Yep.
By Sunday, the SAE National headquarters had already shut down the chapter. And by Monday, the university had shut down the house, expelled all of their members, and both the university and the National Fraternity Organization itself had put out perhaps the most unambiguously language of condemnation that I've seen in the record amount of time that I've seen it happen.
Yeah.
Now, you know, to be fair, one could argue that this was a case where there was absolutely no ambiguity to be debated over. So it wasn't like a fraternity doing a hood-themed party and people debating whether that's appropriation or inappropriate. I mean, this was pretty clear. Like, you're using the N-word. You're talking about lynching. Like, game over for you. But that said, we're talking about 24 to 48 hours, this chapter got completely death penaltied. At a time at which it seems as if with everything else in most college campuses, it goes through this Byzantine, quote unquote, due process in which people are eventually, you know, if not exonerated or given a slap under the wrist. And I want to be clear that I think that what we've seen in the last 3 days has been completely extraordinary in the sense that it is definitely not the ordinary kind of business. And I think that that this is what makes it interesting.
It was drive-through crisis communications.
Right. And again, going back to sort of our continuing discussion around social media, you know, the idea of, you know, fraternities and sororities having, you know, doing things that are racist is not particularly new. It just happens to be this was captured, uploaded, shared at such a pace at which, you know, the university and the national fraternity, you know, probably felt like they had no option to get ahead of this except to just drop the hammer on them.
I want to meet the kid that... Did you see the video?
I haven't seen the video.
There's a kid while the guy's chanting it with so much, just so much pride. And there's a guy who gets up from behind him and goes, wait, 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 no, 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 no. And I want to meet that kid. The kid who was...
He was he's like, let me star in this video that's
no,
about
no, no,
to destroy
no, no,
my
no,
life.
No, oh. He's like, no, everybody shut the fuck up. Like, that's this... There's a guy who gets up and he's like, you guys, hey, no.
Oh, so somebody does at least
does
try to be the moral compass.
Yes, right. Tries, and I want to meet the moral compass because you could see it was blurry, but the horror in his face. He was like, he knew. He was trying to stop them from themselves. Listen to your friends, frat guys.
Yes. Peer pressure in that case is good.
Yeah.
Two things. First of all, the president of the University of Oklahoma currently is David Boren, former governor of Oklahoma and secretary of the Interior, I believe. And it is the benefit of having a politician in that role, somebody who understands that this is not about like normal academic, let's talk about this for 6 months and then form a committee. This is about damage control.
Right.
And it's such an interesting document because it is giving us a record of one of those moments that somebody does something that's truly egregious in a convivial situation. And white men are forced to ask themselves the question, what do I do here? Do I just go along being a bro? Do I stand up and say, hey, hey, wait? Do I take a video of this so that there is proof of it? And I think, let's be honest, we've all been in those situations where somebody was talking shit about either a group that we belong to or a group that we don't belong to, but you're still like, that's not okay. And for me in writers' rooms, there's always that interesting moment of like, is this a moment where I have to like get, you know, say, hey, let's stop? Or is this just sort of a, this isn't the worst thing?
No. When we all live in...
Well, no, honestly...
Guy, go ahead.
Sorry. I mean, the thing is that, like, sometimes people make jokes that aren't the best, but they're also not the worst, and it's not your job to be everybody's mom all the time. But then there does come a point where you do need to stop something and
well,
yes,
I was
going
to circling back to Oliver's point. I think the reason why the hammer got dropped on these guys so quickly is because it was clear cut. It was like, this isn't just some kind of off-color joke. This is several moments of just pure racism.
It was like 1955 in my face on my Twitter feed. There's absolutely no reason in the world why they should be on a bus filming themselves saying the N-word over and over again and lynching. It's 2015.
In 2015, talking about murdering a person for being black.
On your way to some stupid, dumb social at a community center. You've got to be kidding me. You live in Oklahoma.
It makes me wonder, though, if they had a history of doing this in the fraternity.
Clearly. I mean, the chant, this
they
is not something...
They said it's been going back for years.
Right.
Okay, well, that's why got the hammer dropped on them like that. They've been waiting.
There was a really interesting interview with one of the two black men who has been a member of that fraternity, and he was so visibly... This was on, like, local news. He was so visibly hurt by this institution that he loves. And like, as he was saying, he wore those letters, and to hear these guys saying that, I mean, it's
disgusting.
It's disgusting. But at the same time, it is impressive that we live in an age when an all-white fraternity in Oklahoma has enough people to shut that down and talk shit at it from within. Well, because fraternities are all about, essentially, white guys keeping other white guys' secrets. And
that's true. I want to know how much gay sex is going on in that fraternity, too, by the way. Love to know. Tell us. Somebody tweet us and tell us. Also, by the way, it's football season. Football, when you're getting people on, like you're
pre-season.
Scouting.
Yeah.
It's scouting. Mm. So, like, all these dudes, I'm loving it. They're like, sorry, was going to go there. Not going there anymore. Boomer sooner or later. Like, screw that. That. It's not the school's fault, but... You know this has been going on for a long time. It was on social media, so now they have to throw down the hammer. But it's Oklahoma. They've been saying this for years. It's been going on, I'm sure, for years. I don't care what the reaction and the response of the school is. I'm really happy for them. But they know that this is a bigger problem. They know that.
Well, that those dudes still thought that that was an adorable thing to do.
Right, just a light little song.
I would just add that when we all, you know, in 6 months when we're all living in Meerkat Lake Nation,
yes,
that things like this are going to be much more common because,
sure,
right, it's not that the incident is not new, right? It's clearly something that's part of the tradition of this chapter. It's just it's the first time. I mean, we say this about police beatings all the time. We just happen to get it on tape. And so I would imagine that what we're likely going to see is much, much more of this going into the future.
But we're trained. You know, we're professionals. We're older people. We get it.
Yeah, but I'm talking about, you know, 18, 19-year-olds.
I don't even pick my nose at the supermarket.
I also worry, though, that we'll get inured to it because we're going to see it so much more. I think that's already started to happen a little bit with cop beatdowns.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, that's a more complicated topic. We'll have to get into that. We'll revisit that at a different time, but...
Bookmark that.
My deep hope is that we get more chill about like photos and videos of people doing drunk and doing recreational drugs, but still can manage to be outraged by this. Winter, what are you all about this
Mine
week?
Is really quick. I'm all about watching Chris Hemsworth on SNL with the mute button on. I literally
talk about
did.
Damning with faint praise. Okay.
I just, right. No, look.
As long as I can't hear you.
Yeah, as long as I can't hear you, baby. I'm just going to say, first of all, full disclosure, I've partied with him a lot. And no, I'm just kidding. We went to a really cool Kanye party once, me, him, and Jesse Williams, who is on Grey's Anatomy. And it was my birthday. And both of these men are very handsome men. And we were eating, we at the time, they were being managed by one of my best friends, Kimberly. And they both took cookies out of my hand and started eating them in front of me suggestively. Both of them weren't married yet. And
otherwise,
important side
otherwise
detail.
You would have refused
anyway,
that cookie.
They're both attractive men, and I have much deep respect for them and their wives. But I will say this. He is a very beautiful man, Chris Hemsworth. And I wasn't
Winter, is he your top pick of all the Avengers?
No. RDJ all day. I love Robert Downey Jr.
Margaret, your husband is killed in a horrible, horrible accident, and you're only allowed to date one of the Avengers.
Which would it be?
Can you name them so I'm refreshed?
Mark Ruffalo.
Oh, done.
Yeah. See,
yeah.
I knew I got her with the Ruff, man. Yes, Ruffalo's the best.
Wait, are we talking about the characters
and
or the actors?
Oliver, Scarlett Johansson or Scarlett Johansson?
Scarlett Johansson.
Well, no, there's what's her name who was also
Gwyneth
on
Paltrow.
How I Met Your Mother.
And Gwyneth Paltrow.
Kobe Smulders. Kobe Smulders.
She'll always be Great. Kobe Smulders to me.
Is someone ever going to pick Kobe Smulders over Scarlett
I would,
Johansson?
Actually.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
But I don't. Are we Bold talking moves. The actresses or are we talking the characters?
The actor.
Oh. Yeah, it's Robert Downey. It's going to
no,
be
I would
a
still
Robert
go with
Downey
that. ScarJo just seems a little... I don't know if I could handle ScarJo. Let's be real about this.
ScarJo seems real chill, though.
She's
I got to be honest with you.
Maybe half robot.
Yeah, but she seems real chill.
Oliver, you're too indie to exist.
I don't know about the indie, really?
Okay. I don't, but you know what? Anyway, to wrap this up, because I'm just haven't given enough praise to Chris Hemsworth's mind, body, and soul.
I want to ask you what you thought of the Iggy sketch.
Oh, girl.
Right? I almost put that on
your
Facebook
page. It was almost so shady that it was like too shady for TV. It was like not even trying. They weren't even caring if you got the jokes. It was like, basically, you're ridiculous,
yes.
Iggy Azalea. And can we just sidebar this a little bit? But Iggy Azalea off social media, tour not selling, no Grammys. I'm not a one-woman anti-Iggy Azalea street team.
You could be, though.
Let's not even mention the fact that she said on the radio she makes her boyfriend take her cell phone to the club. Girl, you're doing all of this wrong. You're going to have to go back over there to that big island continent and marinate on it over some shrimp.
Winter, I believe that you are the pop culture equivalent of the marriage equality movement, where you've just achieved all of your goals in record time.
So how was Chris, though? I mean, mute button. Was
I love
he bad?
You guys.
Was he bad?
No, he wasn't bad.
Okay.
But the thing is that they were putting so much emphasis on him being gorgeous,
okay,
which he is, and muscular and sexy. It was like every single sketch was about that. You could tell based on the setup of the sketch, and everybody was sort of like fawning, like in this, just looking at him. I was like, you know what? I'm going to just put this on mute, and I'm just going to throw back on that Drake mixtape and write, and I'll just look at him, and he was just delicious to look at.
What movies has his brother been in? Because I lose track as to which of the Hemsworth brothers ends up in what.
You mean the cursory Hemsworth.
Wow.
He's
talking about shade.
He was in the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
He was in the Hunger
Rush
Games.
Rush was Chris Lien.
Rush was Chris Hemsworth?
No.
I really don't watch Chris Hemsworth movies where he doesn't expose some part of his body besides his head.
Okay. Fair enough.
I liked at the beginning of SNL, we got to see the short, meaty Hemsworth brother that we
never
see.
Oh, my God. And then they scurried him off back into his little house cage and said, okay, don't come back.
All right. You guys, this week I am all about the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Yay. Who has watched any Kimmy Schmidt thus far?
I have four episodes last night.
I need to.
I'm really excited to.
Okay. Margaret, you need to watch this. Oliver, to a lesser extent.
Explain that. Explain that. I understand that there's a Vietnamese-American male romantic lead in this series at some point. I think that qualifies me to need to watch it for that reason.
It ticks
alone.
Oliver's Asian box.
Look, it is amazing. It is amazing in so many ways. But this is a show that is an astounding allegory for women in America today. The premise of the show is that she was in a cult basically between like 12 years old and 30, and just got out and is having to figure out what to do with her life. And it's this sort of ridiculous allegory for like, women, you've got legal rights, you've got technical rights. Now what are you going to do with yourselves? And it's fucking amazing. There are no straight white men on this show.
Ooh.
Who get to do anything of real
wow.
note. And it's also saying feminism isn't just a question of men trying to hold you down. It's also a question of you having to make choices and be brave and put yourself out there. It's Mary Tyler Moore, but Rhoda is a gay black man.
Yes, exactly.
I watched all 13 episodes in a row on Saturday night into Sunday morning. I just mainlined it. It's as joke heavy as 30 Rock while being sunny and glorious and exciting in a way that a show hasn't for a really long time. Like, it's the most charming thing
ever.
Are
you sure you didn't get abducted into a cult?
Everything he's saying is completely 100% correct.
Did NBC mess up in not doing
They would
this?
Never air this show. Guy, are you with
well, they
me?
Dropped
they would
it.
Never
they dropped
air
it.
This show.
It's so well made and so joke dense that like halfway through I was like, how on earth did NBC pass on this show? And then I realized, oh, there are no straight guys. Like this is just a question of tone, of this being something that is a little like to look at the show and realize that this super old school funny sitcom is too out there for NBC because there isn't a big strong man standing in the center of it telling other people what to do. I made a joke on Twitter about like, I don't think an episode would pass the reverse Bechdel test. And then somebody who was watching after that point in time said episode 10. Episode 10 is the first time that two men talk to each other about something other than a woman. Like, it is crazy and revolutionary. Pinot Noir is an amazing song. Oh, you haven't gotten there yet. I'm sorry.
No, don't, because I haven't gotten past five. The episode that's still staying with me is the episode where Jane Krakowski's character talks about her origin story.
Well, that's the thing. There are some racially problematic things with the show that a lot of people have started think-piecing about, but the moment anyone says that Titus Andromedon is a caricature of a gay man, I will come after them with a knife. because he is gigantic and he is fun and he is fabulous, but that is a human character in a way that we haven't gotten from a gay guy on TV in a long time. I fucking love that show. Also, all right, final point. The theme song makes me cry. The theme song, every time, wow. It's like...
He's building the expectations.
I'm sorry, but the theme song is like an auto-tuned news report about, like, the guy who went crazy after those women got freed from the man
who
was holding
them prisoner. He didn't go crazy. He was the one who discovered them. Tell the story correctly.
He just flamboyantly described it, and then it got auto-tuned. And they did something similar on this show, but every time they say females are strong as hell, I cannot stop water from coming out of my eyes.
It's like literally a 24-minute crack rock of awesome. It's just so tight and funny and quick and witty and Ellie Kemper is so good. I never realized how talented she is. She's just very talented, very physical.
The show is a really deep bench of talent. Carol Kane,
dude. You know, the best.
Yeah, it's the best. And it makes up for just how bad season 3 of House of Cards was.
Right.
All right, you guys, you're listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back to talk about discovering new music after this break.
Welcome to Oh No, Ross and Carrie.
Ross.
Hi, Carrie.
What do you think is creepier?
Okay.
You jump into a swimming pool. All of a sudden, the water goes away, and instead of water, there is the bones of your dead ancestors.
Ew.
Or our show.
That's pretty tough because we've visited a live exorcism.
We joined the Ordo Templi Orientis, where we had to worship a naked lady.
Oh, and we joined that Tony Alamo cult. No. They were scary.
Super creepy. We joined the Aetheri Society.
We tried penis enlargement, or at least I did.
Oh boy, I tried breast enlargement. We have basically done every creepy, weird, fringe thing except for thousands more, which we will get to if you listen to our show.
I'd still say the swimming pool with my ancestors' bones.
Well, then I don't even know if people should listen.
I guess they shouldn't.
But if you want to, we're at Maximum Fun, and the show's called Oh No, Ross and Carrie.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm Guy Branum. Over in the studio are Margaret Wappler.
Hi there.
Hey. Oliver Wang.
Hello, hello.
And the lovely Winter Mitchell.
Hi, guys.
All right. Since we're figuring out this whole me not being in the same room with them thing, they decided we should talk about something that I have almost nothing to say about. Margaret, tell us where people are finding new music.
Okay, so just to lay out the landscape here, in the days before the internet, we found out about new music through a few reliable channels, like our radio DJs, MTV, our friends, glossy magazines, Xerox zines with staples in them. Simply being in the record store on Tuesday, the day albums were traditionally released, to see what came in. But now things are different. Those channels, some of them are still alive and well, but for the last 10 or so years, 15 or so years, websites, apps, and social media have changed the game. To rattle off a few, there's Spotify, Pandora, Bandcamp, Hype Machine, Last.fm, which has been around since 2002, which makes it an internet geezer. Shazam, and that's not even mentioning the websites that make it easier for you to source music before everyone else, namely NPR's First Listen and Pitchfork's Advance. We also have TV shows, movies, and curated lists made especially for certain retail environments, all eager to push us to discovery. So I wonder, for all of you guys, how do you find out about new music?
I'll start with Margaret's question, because I'm probably the only person here who actually has at some point been obligated and still am obligated to actually keep up with new music. Every 3 weeks, I usually appear on KPCC, which is a local public radio station here in Los Angeles, to talk about new music. Shout out to Morgan Rhodes, who's my partner in crime on that. For someone who's been writing about music for 20 years now, I definitely feel, you know, the shift in the landscape that Margaret's talking about. Though, every time I think about this question, I think about this question a lot, I'm split between, is it the landscape that's changed dramatically, or is it simply that I'm older and therefore I'm lazier, or I'm not as interested in being invested in keeping up with new music in the same channels I did before? So when I'm preparing for the new music segment for this other station, usually the places I go to will include Bandcamp. They will include a site called audiocastle.co, which basically more or less bootlegs or pirates any new song that's come out. And it pulls from a variety of different channels to do that. And they specialize primarily in hip-hop and R&B. So if I want to figure out what is the literally latest things that are out, Audio Castle is one place to go. But then a lot of my musical tastes, I think, are certainly shared by what I see being promoted on Twitter and Facebook, but what my friends are listening to. I'm not looking at magazines. I'm not reading online magazines to figure this stuff out as much, and which may or may be to my detriment. Maybe I would be more current, or I would have a better sense of the current trends if I were looking to the sources that do that, as you know, that's their purpose, is to kind of to funnel those things. But I think partly as I get older, I just don't have the same energy that I want to apply to try to figure all this out. I'll just add one more thing: is I just finished writing a story about the history of the flexi disc, and especially in the 1980s and prior, you would have magazines like Flexi Pop that would be devoted to every issue would have a flexi disc of this new upcoming song by some artist. And if you think about the ways in which we learned about new music, we had to wait for something to arrive in the mail and, you know, give us a tease. And now, you know, it's at the click of our fingers. But it's just the amount of information. And again, I think this is my age speaking, at times feels overwhelming in terms of how do you filter through that. And, this is nothing particularly new that I'm saying. But yeah, I think that is the challenge.
Flexi discs were those little records that would come like in a magazine or something.
Yeah, or they would be on the back of your cereal box, you know, or they would come, in the magazine, on top of the magazine. They would come on margarine lids. I mean, the flexi technology allowed you to print phonographed grooves on pretty much, you know, any kind of paper or plastic medium, and people would find different ways of turning that into a promotional device. Yeah, exactly. Something like that. You could be scratching
some tight
like a butter
on that margarine.
You know, I mean, Third Man Records, which is Jack White's label, they did a pretty innovative model of distribution. They printed up 1,000 records on a postcard and then distributed by 1,000 balloons. And if you found one, if the balloon landed, you found one, like Yahtzee. If you didn't, then that's too bad. And those things were going for, I think, at one point, $3,000 on eBay.
Because, oh, wow.
Because so few copies ended up in anybody's hands. Anyways, you know, these are an older technology to sort of promote music. Nowadays, you know, you can go to 1,000 different sites and figure out what's happening out there. But because I'm an old man, I just find that exhausting to some degree.
Well, two things I want to ask you about. One, I find it interesting that you don't look at magazines or online sites. And that's interesting to me because you're a writer, music writer, and these are the gatekeepers. Why have you decided not to check in?
Partly because I'm no longer I don't necessarily have to write about the newest and biggest pop releases. And mm-hmm. I think if that was the case, if I had to be expected to know when Taylor Swift's album was coming out, and again, nothing against Taylor, but if I had to be on that beat, then maybe I would spend more time looking at, you know, your Pitchforks and your other conventional sources these days in which that information is being shared. For me, I get to pick and choose what I want to talk about, and so I'm more interested in the stuff that's lurking in the corners. And occasionally that's big pop songs, but a lot of the time it's reissues. It's sort of stuff that certainly hasn't really crested yet. So I think it's partly I'm allowed to explore other things than the kind of obvious things that a pop critic might be talking about, and that allows me to kind of bypass the Rolling Stones and the Spins and all the kind of old-school methods in which one would normally have learned about new music.
What you said as well about age in discovering music is interesting to me because when I was 18, 19 years old, I remember somebody saying, hey, Superchunk is playing tonight. And I was like, who's Superchunk? And they were like, come down and see him at wherever this place was in Columbia, Missouri that I'm now blanking. But I went there, I saw it, loved Superchunk, got into it. Nowadays, if somebody was like, hey, come see this cool band, I'd be like, oh, no. I'll sit at my computer. I'll research it for an hour. I'll listen to some tracks. I'm not going down to the club.
Do I want to take that drive? How do I learn about music? Well, first of all, I was lucky enough to be born into a super musical family. My mom and dad loved music and played all different types. Other thing is that now, ever since the advent of the internet, it was really, it was cooler that way to find out about music from other people, what other people were listening to. But when I was growing up, that's just how you found out, like Margaret said, about music. Now, you know, I would download when the internet first came out, yes, I torrented, I would download every song that I actually loved to hear and wanted to hear in its entirety without some DJ being like, boom, 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 you know, playing like, you know, champagne bottles popping and like air horns in the middle of it. And then I started listening to sort of the Pandoras, you know, as that unfolded, the Napsters. And then I've always, there's, I feel, always feel like there's two different kinds of people. There's the person who listens to Pandora because they want to be introduced and they want to discover. I'm much more of a curator. So like, I will hear something on KCRW, and that's where basically I rely on KCRW first thing in the morning to sort of give me all the new music. Because like Garth Trinidad and all the other amazing DJs on, in the morning, they bring in, you know, new music at the top of the hour usually. So I hear new music, I like it or I don't. Usually when I'm coming home late at night, I hear a lot of good stuff. So KCRW is like really the strong one for me. Then also Vine, because kids will take a snippet of a song and they'll redo the song in so much, or they'll make it its own. And then I have, and then people always say, well, what's this song? What's the song? And then you'll find out the origin of it. That's how I learned about a lot of local artists, new artists that are emerging or are sort of coming to the, you know, out of nowhere, out of the woodwork.
We talked about this in last week's episode, but I think it's also, we're, you know, we're talking about how music supervisors seem to have much better taste. And I certainly have learned about songs based on things that I've heard used in television shows. And I will go and sound, what's the app, SoundHound? Anyways, you know, I'll basically try to figure out, so what was the theme song or what was the song that was used at the end of the show? And that's certainly one way in which, you know, I'm picking up, you know, on new songs as well. Guy, you had something to say.
Well, there was that transcendent point in like the late 90s, early 2000s, when MTV started playing much more interesting music on their original programming than they were ever playing on TRL. Not that I care about interesting or original music. This is just what people who know better about this than I do told me. But it is a really interesting point that people like you, Oliver, ended up getting into those jobs and sort of like infusing taste and style into it. When I worked on Awkward on MTV, our showrunner's husband was the music supervisor, and he was played a really important role in like setting the tone of the show and communicating its message.
Well, I wanted to ask you guys what you think of this shift in the record release day. So it's always been Tuesday. That's been the traditional day.
Yeah.
Now, as of this summer, it's going to be Friday, and it's going to be a global release date. And part of the reason it's going to happen that way is supposedly to stave off piracy and to also rejuvenate this idea of the occasion of music, of an album dropping and all of us rallying around it and getting really excited. Do you think this is going to work?
I don't understand that. How does it stave off piracy?
Because it all comes out, you know, sometimes it's released differently in different times.
It's released differently in different countries.
Because
the U.S. is actually usually the last to get it.
But it used to be Russia.
One of the major ways that I've gotten music over the past 10 years is on the dance floor at gay bars. And so frequently they'll end up getting pop music that maybe has been released here but just isn't popular here yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like even like One Direction and The Wanted, I was hearing a year before they sort of went crazy for them here. And that it just, I don't understand that. I don't understand because to go back 10 years, even Backstreet Boys were like huge in Germany before they were here, and then they were still successful here. It's a process I've never understood.
About their success or the release of the music? That's two different things.
It's not about the release of the music. It's just about success. Don't pay attention to me.
I think that you have to start doing it because people are releasing music whenever they want to. The major artists are being like, sorry, I'm going to just drop my album like right now. Sorry, I'm going to just put it all on SoundCloud and not obey or whatever. I mean, I think that the music industry is completely out of labels' control now. It's in our control, and we're sort of the ones who can sort of demand when things have to happen and occur. We've shifted. Sean Parker and Sean Fanning shifted an entire industry to have to be, it's up to us now. We determine sort of how things occur. And you know what? If you're going to release an album on Friday, it's fine because now it's harder to get people in the seats on Friday to go see movies anyway. So I believe that this is going to start shifting a lot of the other industry standards, you know, books being released on Monday, you know, Thursday night opening a movie. You know, everything's going to shift eventually.
Do you mean shift as in everyone's going to just pick a different date, or it's just going to explode when we actually release things in general? Like, are all
everybody's going to pick a different date. They're going to have to. They're going to start with that because they're going to start trying to, like, you know, manage everybody's expectations in their own. But I think eventually the wheels are going to fall off all of this. You just can't dictate these things anymore. We're too unpredictable as a people.
Do you think it's going to spark an occasion around music again, Oliver?
I mean, not in the if what they're trying to do is recapture, you know, the kind of the singular event of a release date as it functioned, you know, when we were growing up in the 80s and 90s. No, I don't think so. For all the reasons that I think, you know, Winter has laid out and many others have as well. You know, to me, it doesn't bother me if they want to create a global release date. That actually seems kind of sensible. Why didn't you do this 100 years ago? I don't know. whether, you know, moving it from Tuesday to Friday seems a little bit gimmicky. I do think actually it puts it up against movies, and I don't know if that actually makes sense to me or not, even if there's been a drop-off in people going to the movies. But whatever, you just pick a day, everyone puts the music out. Whether it slows piracy, again, I'm a little bit skeptical about that as well. It just seems to me that the industry keeps wanting to figure out how can we reclaim our glory days. And I don't know if there's any evidence that suggests such a thing is possible.
Right.
I think that the future, as Winter suggests, and I may not necessarily be quite as optimistic as she is in terms of thinking the power's in our hands. I think labels still have a lot of power. But this idea that we're going to go back to like the 90s and 60s and 70s and the height of corporate labels, you know, dictating everything. I think those days are gone. And instead, it's basically this open battlefield where everyone's basically fighting over trying to claim a little bit of turf within it.
But is this going to shift aggregation power? Like power that was once in the hands of the labels to sort of direct you, is that power going somewhere else now?
Well, it was interesting to me that in the news about this shift from Tuesday to Friday, an indie label out of Britain, Beggar's Banquet, they were furious about it. And they were like, this is only going to marginalize us further. Like, people aren't going to be able to find our music in the big pile of music that's already out there. Like, what are we going to do? And I have to say, I didn't quite understand that reaction. Do you guys have any light to shed on why they would be concerned?
I guess the idea here is that if everyone across the world is releasing music on the same day and you are a smaller label and you don't have the marketing resources of, let's say, a Sony, that you're going to be lost in the shuffle because now instead of competing against the releases coming within your own country, you're now going up against releases that are happening in other countries. I kind of get it, but I'm also thinking, but why, what if you just stay on Tuesday? Like, who's forcing you to come out on Friday unless retailers are somehow participating in this? But No one buys music. I mean, very few people buy music
physically.
I feel
like retailers have to be in on this because it used to be that you just go to Tower and you haven't from, you know, either line up or queue up beforehand or you go there throughout the week. But now you will have to, because you said something earlier about you don't think it's going to be a threat for movies. I 100% think it's going to be a threat for movies.
I was thinking the other way. I think the fact that people still want to go to movies means that they're not going to want to be at home waiting for the new album to drop.
No, I don't think it's like that. I honestly think that if we're saying Friday, so I'm thinking midnight Thursday, 11:59 Thursday, okay. Midnight Friday, okay. Because you want to have that conversation begin on Friday, water cooler, we're about to go kick it, and then
it has to start during drive time.
It has to start during drive time. You need that conversation. But then I also think that I did an experiment last week with one of my clients, and just to ask them, you know, what do you prefer, TV or music? Overwhelmingly, this person has like 15 million Twitter followers, which is the subset of the key demographics. They were overwhelming, like 80% said music.
Okay.
So people aren't really going to see movies. Kids don't have money. If they're going to go between a movie
album. So if you're 18 and the new Drake is dropping that night and you're super stoked about it, maybe you're going to stay home and listen to that instead of going out to the movies. Is that the idea?
True. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Now I think, but every time I ask my students, and I teach mostly first and second year students at Cal State Long Beach about what movies they've seen, it's like two of them have seen something, which always I'm always surprised by that.
That is shocking.
Yeah, they don't watch movies at all. I mean, apparently, I don't know. Maybe small sample size.
Except Gone Girl.
I mean, I was going to say we talked about this,
you know,
maybe about a month ago about how CD sales have been on the decline and don't look to be resurrected, and even digital sales are on the decline. And really, what's rising is streaming. And so to go back to Winter's point that if Spotify or whatever your favorite streaming service is putting stuff up at midnight on you know, Friday morning. You know, you have it in time, so when you wake up, you can, bam, you got it. You are ready to go with it.
And people are reluctantly adding their music to the streaming.
Right.
It's weird what keeps popping up.
I just don't know what, I don't know what the long-term impact of shifting the release date is going to be, whether for big labels or small labels. You know, I definitely think that as a consumer, it's going to take a while for us to readjust because we have been conditioned from birth that, okay, Tuesday is the day, and now we have to shift our expectations either 3 days later or 4 days earlier, depending on how you want to look at it. But I don't know. If this is supposed to be like the Hail Mary pass by the music industry, I just don't really see it working. You know, I think the same difficulties will still present themselves.
Yeah, it feels like too little, too late.
The short-term ramification of this album release thing is that my album, Guy Branum, Effable, is coming out on Tuesday, April 14th. And all of you should go to iTunes and pre-order it. All right, you guys, you're listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back after this.
Welcome to Lady Show. Behind door number one, we have fantastic weekly guests like Aisha Tyler, French Stewart, Retta, and more.
Behind door number two, we have road trip and sleepover games like Would You Rather and Never Have I Ever, the kind of games that remind you of being a kid.
Door number three brings you fresh hot episodes every Wednesday. You can find them on iTunes and at MaximumFun.org.
Now pick a door. Just kidding. They're not real because we're a podcast.
You're all winners.
And we didn't really think this through. Lady to Lady.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm Guy Branum in New York. Back in the West Coast studios, we've got...
Margaret Wappler.
Oliver Wang.
Winter Mitchell.
Woohoo! Every week on Pop Rocket, we ask our panel, what's your current jam? Winter Mitchell, what's your jam?
Oh, so this is dedicated to Biggie. Yesterday was the anniversary of his murder. Just want to say, add that. He was murdered.
LAPD
by the LA, allegedly by the LAPD or a gang member. However, the reason why I'm playing Going Back to Cali from Life After Death is because it was this to me was when I really started to like Big, and I felt like all this East Coast, it was right at when this song was released that I felt like this East Coast West Coast BS is really starting to grate, and he actually likes California, and I love this particular this section because he talks about
nice breasts in the West.
Nice breasts in the West. He was giving us
nice
so
penis
much
penis in the East.
No, he was just like with some freak from Frisco, and you know I'm from Frisco, so like I just love Big. Here's the song. I'm going back to Cali. Is this from my time code, Colin? Back to Cali. Wow. I'm going back to Cali. Might as well not do it now. Everybody knows the song. It's 20 years old. I got to choose the East. I live out there, so don't go there. But that don't mean that nigga can't rest in the West. See some nice breasts in the West. Smoke some nice sets in the West. Y'all thinking it's a mess. Thinking I'm gonna stop. Give it L.A. props. I love his... He just sounds happy singing this. He's going for the women and the weed and the... You know, it just sort of embodies everything that's glorious about being a Californian. I love when people give us love like that, when they just talk about how much they love coming out here, you know?
Mm-hmm. Do you guys think that there's a little sign up at the Source Awards that says, it has been 20 years since the last murder?
Maybe
they should do that.
Take
like the labor, like the labor poster?
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Ouch.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Big ups to Brooklyn.
Rest in peace, Big.
Margaret, what's your current jam?
Well, my current jam, in keeping with the theme of this week's show about where do you find new music, a lot of the ways I find new music is through friends posting things on Facebook. They do the work for me. Great. So this is a mixtape that someone posted, and it's from Jakarta Records, which is a label out of Germany. And it's basically the label head went traveling around Tunisia and Morocco and all these places in North Africa and just got a bunch of records and recorded a bunch of crazy 60s, 70s Arabic music. So we're going to hear a little bit of that. So the reason I wanted to pick this is just because in my limited world out here in Southern California, this is the kind of music that's not going to easily cross my path. And so it's just great to have somebody post it and for me to discover it and then to follow the trail that this leaves for me to listen to other songs like this and to listen to like pre-revolution Iranian pop. Like, it opened so many doors.
It sounds like a Bond song from when he's like on a car chase, maybe in... New Delhi.
Yeah, hell yeah. It's you know?
It's Roger Moore era Bond.
Yeah, thing, for yeah. sure. Yeah. Like A View to a Kill cutscene.
I've really enjoyed all of those people who have brought sort of like 60s pop from other countries to us in cheeky movies since 1997. Like in Ghost World, the fun Bollywood number and stuff. It's like just realizing there was magnificent stuff going on all over the world
that
we just weren't exposed to.
Right.
Absolutely.
Oliver, what is your jam this week?
Shannon Starr's new single, Blah Blah Blah. So Sean and Star are on the Daptone label, which is best known for having Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. And Sean and Star were actually, or are perhaps still, Sharon Jones' backup singers. But they have now gone into a group unto themselves. This is the second single they put out. And to go back to Margaret's question of how did I first hear about this, actually, I follow Daptone on Twitter. And so even though they sent me a copy of the physical 7-inch by mail, I'd already heard the song about 3 days earlier because Daptone had been put out a blast on Twitter. And, you know, I've always loved the Daptone and the Dap King sound, and I like that they're now working with other artists besides just Sharon, who I think is fantastic, but it's nice to hear kind of other vocalists get a turn over their particular style of, again, very 60s and 70s soul and funk influenced beats. And especially as a duo, you get this harmonizing action between Sean and Star, and it's just a lovely, lovely single.
I want to make 2 points. The first one is, A, Twitter is really important for getting music for me these days. I am not paying attention to a bunch of music, and I rely on other people to sort of like decide what is sunny and magical enough that they can't shut up about it, and that's when I fall in love. My other point is that I'm not in the studio, so I can't hear Sean and Star's Blah Blah Blah. So there's no way that I can compare it quality wise to Kesha's Blah Blah Blah. And
that's oh my God.
The key question I'm going to have to use in determining and evaluating whether I believe that Oliver's taste in music is better than mine or not. Which leads us to my jam for the week, which is a song I bought from Empire. I bought a song off of Empire.
You did not.
Nice.
No one's proud of that.
I'm proud of you for it. Well, I want to know which one it is. Was it the one where he said it takes a man to love a man? This is a song that loves a man.
Yes, yes. It's that one. And I bought it just because I was like, oh, like there are never dance songs that are about a dude loving
another dude. I'm disappointed that you
dude.
Were being so typical.
Yes, it was me being very obvious. But when I listened to the song, like it's actually kind of a good song. Like it's an interesting song
helps.
About like, all right, does Colin have it? I emailed it to him.
Well, then the first problem is Colin's using an iPhone 4. That's the first problem.
Oh, shots.
Okay.
Sorry, Wappler, but both y'all need to get with the program.
God, what is this, 2013 up in here?
2013 up in here.
Jesus.
There's an upgrade available to you.
Buy
I know
me
that.
A new one, sugar daddies and mamas.
Hey. Go. Up, down, up, down, up, down, up.
Sometimes you feel insecure.
Yeah.
Trust me, babe, I understand.
I mean, that's a lot of auto-tune. That's a significant amount of auto-tune.
I love this song. Even when he was dancing. Did you see his, like, on last week's episode where he had, like, his D'Angelo Untitled moment? And Luscious's face was just, he didn't even address it. He didn't even.
I just love so much that it's a song about, like, originally it was a song about a woman who, like, dislikes things about herself, and those are the very things that a man loves about her. And, like, the way that a young Jamal would have, like, identified with that song and understood it just gets to the ways that, however amazing Kimmy Schmidt is, Empire is still the gayest show on television right
Truth.
Now.
Truth. Speaking
all
it,
right, you guys.
100.
That's all the time we have for this week. Goodbye.
Bye.
You have been... Well, actually, don't leave yet, exactly, because I have to tell you about the show. You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Branum, with the very patient Winter Mitchell, Oliver Wang, and Margaret Wappler, who had to deal with me on Skype this week. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to Nictum17, NC Newbie, Spencer Alger, GG281, which I'm pretty sure is also an asteroid, Eons Past, Call Me Bryce Lee, Peppy, Dom from NM. Dom from NM, before you post on our iTunes review, we're going to need to establish a safe word. Get it? Because he's a Dom. Redwood83, Science Corp, and Head Over Hoods for the 5-star reviews in iTunes.
Oh, can we talk about the bitch that left the 1-star review? I looked at all your other 1-star reviews. All you do is bitch all day long. Get some happiness in your life. Don't ever listen to our podcast again.
I'm sorry if I curse too much. I'll
and
try
I'm
to
sorry,
curse
Mom,
less.
If I curse too much, but that was just, that 1-star review didn't even have any, there was no backup. There was no analytical backup to it. You were just having a bad day. Don't listen to our podcast again.
We love all of our reviews, though, because they're talking about us, and that's what really matters. If you haven't already, please review us. It helps push up the iTunes charts and
we
get
need
more
you
listeners.
Back. Yep, 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 yep.
Yep, 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 yep. What's your take on this week, buddy? Yep, 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 yep.
We post show notes each week on MaximumFun.org, including everyone's jams and any other useful links. You can get in touch with us on Twitter, @PRPod, or join the Pop Rocket Podcast Facebook. Head on over there and tell us what your first inappropriate movie was. Also, everybody say what your Twitter handle is so everybody can follow us.
Oh, that's right. Mine is Queen Everything, Kween Everything. Not
Oliver,
Winter Mitchell.
SoulSides.com.
Margaret Wappler.
Complicated. A sensible Twitter handle that is your own
what
name.
What can I say?
And is good for business purposes. That perish the thought.
Sometimes it's good to have an unusual name. What can I say?
And I'm @GuyBranum. We're a production of listener-supported MaximumFun.org. All hail great leader Jesse Thorne. And our producer is the very technically savvy Colin Anderson.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.